Welcome to Perspectives, the Voice of America's weekly look at religion, ethics, and values. I'm your host, Adam Phillips, sitting in for Gary Edquist. The music of Buddhist Tibet may seem strange to Western ears, but the insights the Buddhist worldview provide have lasting relevance for all human beings, caught up, as we so often are, in mental confusion and the suffering born of conflicts both within ourselves and between ourselves and others. This is the message of the 14th Dalai Lama of Tibet, who has just completed an 11-day visit to the United States to plea for a brave and principled U.S. stand against Chinese human rights violations. As the temporal and spiritual leader of the Tibetan people, the Dalai Lama has had his ancient Buddhist philosophy of meditation, loving kindness, and compassion put to the test many times since 1949. That is when the Chinese invaded his Himalayan homeland, claiming it as their own, in a process that, according to the Dalai Lama, has claimed over 1 million Tibetan lives. The Chinese ransacked thousands of Buddhist monasteries, devastated the local culture, and caused the Dalai Lama himself, whose admirers the world over referred to as His Holiness, to flee to neighboring India, where he has lived in exile since 1959. Ever since, the Dalai Lama has been a tireless warrior for the Tibetan cause, but he has done so peacefully, refusing to advocate violence and hatred against the Chinese occupiers, whom he calls his so-called enemy. This is in keeping with his conviction that violence only creates more violence, and that while pain itself may be inevitable, most suffering actually arises from an ignorant mental attitude. For his leadership and stand against violence, the Dalai Lama was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize in 1989. I was privileged to meet with the Dalai Lama during the first stop of his U.S. visit in Atlanta, Georgia, where he had come to honor the late Reverend Martin Luther King, Jr., the black civil rights leader who was also devoted to the principle of nonviolence. In what follows, you'll hear portions of my conversation with the Dalai Lama, plus excerpts from the Dalai Lama's recent book of lectures entitled The World of Tibetan Buddhism. Our interview began when I asked the Dalai Lama to give his views on the nature of conflict and peace, both on an individual level and between people.
Conflict. My view is there are basically two kinds of conflict. One with physical, cool and hot. Then another is a conflict due to mental state, different ideas, different thought. So perhaps I think a human being, mainly, due to the human intelligence, we find a lot of different ideas. So as a result, a lot of different views and disagreement. A conflict started. Now, due to different religious tradition, different ideology, different systems. These, actually, I think, man's creation. I think because of human intelligence, conflict always there. Within oneself, there is a conflict views. Now, for example, before lunch, when you are hungry, some kind of feeling. Then after lunch, you may have another feeling, another idea. There is conflict. There always is conflict. At the same time, there are always another factor which combine. Because both my idea. So on that level, now if I'm an of wisdom, I can avoid the mental depression or even the suicide, these things. Clear. On the basis of all, these are my thought. It's my different idea. So similarly, you see, one conflict or idea with your neighbor, or nation level, or community level, you see, oh, we are same human being on this small planet. You see, we have to find ways to overcome. I think there's always, you see, another is a greater force or greater thing. So therefore, you see, when you find conflict, then, you see, important to look the greater, you see, views or wider perspective. You always find something, you see, which uniting them.
Common ground.
Yes, common ground. So that's, I think, the proper way. Conflict always there. And yet, there is a conflict within humanity. So, therefore, see, we have to take interest first, the welfare or benefit of the humanity. Now, humanity. We have, I think, very good brain, generally speaking. Although, potentially, we also have the good heart. But generally, we are neglect that part. We too much pay attention about brain side. So these unfortunate events, things happen. So unless you see, we go into the root cause, it is rather difficult to solve this problem. This is my feeling. The real answer for conflict, I believe, the human compassion. Lack of human compassion. So you see, if we promote the value of human affection, one another, you see, sense of universal responsibility. I think the logic is quite clear. Now today, world becomes smaller. Hardly is the my interest, which isolated from the rest of the interest of the rest of the people. No such things there. So my interest, my future, very much related with others' interest. So if the entire human community become more prosperity, more happier, more peaceful, you will get a benefit. So my interest or our interest very much linked with others. That's the reality.
Just as I desire happiness and wish to avoid suffering, the same is true of all other living beings. They too desire and wish to avoid suffering. The great Buddhist commentator Shantideva argues that although there are different parts of our body, such as our head, limbs and so on, insofar as the need to protect them is concerned, there is no difference among them, for they are all equally parts of the same body. In the same manner, all sentient beings have this natural tendency, wishing to attain happiness and be free from suffering. And insofar as that natural inclination is concerned, there is no difference whatsoever between all sentient beings. Consequently, we should not discriminate between ourselves and others in working to gain happiness and overcome suffering.
According to Mahayana Buddhism, which is the branch of Buddhism that the Dalai Lama and other Tibetans belong to, wisdom is as nothing without compassion. Mahayana Buddhists see the ultimate union of wisdom and compassion embodied by enlightened practitioners known as bodhisattvas. Bodhisattvas not only practice meditation and detachment for purposes of their own liberation from suffering, they dedicate the fruits of their spiritual work to the well-being and liberation of every other being in the universe. Indeed, bodhisattvas are said to make the ultimate self-sacrifice by delaying their own entry into nirvana, or ultimate peace, until all other beings are prepared to enter this blissful awakened state along with them. The Buddha himself was just one such bodhisattva. With the twinkle in his eye that is so characteristic of him, the Dalai Lama told me that the bodhisattva's compassionate renunciation of all personal gain is paradoxically the most selfish thing anyone can do.
Sometimes I jokingly, you see, half joke, you see, telling you see, people, these Bodhisattvas and Buddhas are most selfish people. They really know, you see, how to get maximum happiness to oneself. Apparently, they forget about one's own interests, sacrifice. But in reality, these people are the real, practical, selfish people. We do not care about others, you see, welfare or others' right, then eventually, you see, we'll suffer. So our selfish is really foolish selfish. Their selfish is wise selfish.
The greatest obstacle for cultivating compassion and a good heart is the attitude that cherishes one's own welfare and benefit while remaining oblivious to the well-being of others. This self-centered attitude underlies most of our ordinary states of mind. The commentator Shantideva explains that delusions such as hatred, anger, attachment, and jealousy, which reside in our own minds, are our true enemies. He states that these enemies do not have physical bodies with legs and arms, nor do they hold weapons in their hands. Instead, they reside in our minds and afflict us from within. They control us from within and bind us to them as their slaves. They play tricks on us. Desire, for example, appears to us as a trusted friend, something beautiful and even dear to us. Similarly, anger and hatred appear to us like our protectors or reliable bodyguards. Sometimes, when someone is about to harm you, anger arises like a protector and gives you a kind of strength. Even though you may be physically weaker than the assailant, anger makes you feel strong. It gives you a false sense of power and energy, the result being that you might get yourself beat up. In order to realize fully the treasury of these negative thoughts and emotions, you must first achieve a calm state of mind. Only then will we begin to see their treacherous nature.
Of course, there is sometimes an objective basis for perceiving the external threat to oneself, or in the Dalai Lama's case, to one's people and way of life. During our interview, I was interested to hear what the Dalai Lama had to say about this.
What is the ideal way of looking at your enemy? I know you've called China your so-called enemy, which I always thought was very poignant and beautiful. Is there some way of looking at your adversary that is most beneficial?
Enemy, in conventional or considered common belief, is an individual person or a group of people who creates, pains and trouble or suffering with negative emotion, or deliberately create, that we call enemy. We do not call doctor who carries some surgeries, some cutting, you see, your body, because of the there is no such intention. So it's intentionally create some pains, that we call enemy. But enemy is enemy. But then, you see, usually, you see, we got the sort of, the impression or habit. Once you give name enemy, then some kind of negative feeling. Your side also, you see, some kind of counter sort of negative feeling. That, absolutely wrong. I mean, realize or aware that the enemy creates pains on you deliberately, but because of that, because of the enemy, there is the, possibility to develop hatred. Now, that is the prime time to control or to practice patience. So from that viewpoint, you see, in order to strengthen your practice, you see, you need someone who deliberately creates a problem. So from that viewpoint, enemy is the real teacher of that practice. Buddha cannot do.
It gives you the opportunity to express your free will in a more beneficial, not hating kind of way.
Right.
I guess everything becomes your teacher if you have the right attitude you can have.
Yes, that's right. Every event, everything, if you read properly, yes, you can learn something.
What can normal, everyday people, people who aren't necessarily, monks or nuns, do to maximize wisdom and compassion in their life? What can they do in order to get an explicit awareness of their own fundamental sanity?
We always, you see, emphasize the importance of realistic. So you see, once we come across, you see, pains and some you see, tragic, you see, experiences, if you be realistic, you see, something avoidable, you see, you have to make every effort to avoid. If something unavoidable, then you see, because you should not feel too much, you see, because of frustration, but because it's something anyway, you see, it can happen. It already happened, or it has already no way to avoid. So you see, instead of so much as the mental stress, just to take easy. After all, why you see you feel so much uncomfortable, you see, towards that event? Because you want happiness, and that event, you see, destroy your happiness. Now that, you see, the destructive force already happened. Now if you too much stress, then more pains. You do not want pain. So better, you see, to take easy. And then also, you see, useful, something is happen. That if you too much concentrate on it and look at closely, and it appears huge, very big. The same event, look from distance, from wider perspective, then it becomes smaller. And also remember, not only myself, but there are millions of other people also, see, facing the same experience. Then you see, it reduces mental sort of burden.
Ordinarily, our mind is heavily obscured by concepts and different states of thoughts and emotions. In order to recognize the essential nature of our own mind, it is necessary to peel away the different conceptual layers and clear the obscurations. In this way, we will be able to see the true face of our own mind. Consciousness is like a crystal stone. While a crystal is resting on a colored surface, you cannot see the real untinted clarity of the crystal stone. But once you take the crystal away from the colored surface, you can perceive its actual clarity. Luminosity, or the natural clarity of the mind, is something that I cannot fully explain to you in words. If, on the other hand, you undertake these experiments on your own, you will begin to understand through experience and eventually be able to say, ah, that is the luminous nature of mind.
And that's Perspectives for this week. I'm Adam Phillips. You've been listening to portions from an interview I had in Atlanta recently with the Dalai Lama of Tibet, the exiled political and spiritual leader of the Tibetan people and the recipient of the 1989 Nobel Peace Prize. Excerpts from His Holiness's recent book of lectures entitled The World of Tibetan Buddhism were translated by Geisha Tupem Jimba and read for our program by Norbu Sampel of the Voice of America's Tibetan Service. This program was produced and directed by Bob Doty. Gary Edquist, our regular host, will be back next week. Please tune in then for another edition of Perspectives, the Voice of America's weekly look at religion, ethics, and values.